Mully and Haw. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We have a lot of people who want to check in on our conversation. 312-644-6767. Let's start with Craig. Craig's on the road. Hey, Craig.
Hey, guys. Yeah, Craig from Bettendorf, and I'll keep this short. I'm wondering about the personnel groupings they had. You know, you've got Fulcrum at 6'6", strong guy, bumped off the ball, and he is not standing on the goal line.
Thanks, Craig. I'm sorry. Your call is dying on us.
Fulcrum at 6'6".
He was saying, why don't they have bigger and stronger, more physical receivers?
During the Hail Mary?
That's what he's saying.
Put him back there? I would have been okay with that because you have somebody that would have maybe gotten the ball at the point of, you know, the point of attack would have been quicker, higher.
Ertz, isn't he kind of the same height? Wouldn't that make sense to match up? I don't know.
But it's also a situation where it's not a natural posture for somebody to play defense if you're a tight end. You see it happen. What happened? I don't know.
I don't think it was the height of the play.
It was a fluky play. I'm always going to look at that as a fluky play. What happened before that was within your power, and you can control that more. And Tyreek Stevenson could have done a better job of controlling where he was.
Well, that's the big problem.
It's all a problem.
Thank you. Foxy.
It's all problem. Tyreek Stevenson, the decision on the play before that,
the play before that led to that.
Yes.
I mean, ridiculously silly, kind of dumb idea to let him pick up 13 yards with 2 seconds left. But then it starts with not rushing the quarterback. The guy had, 13 seconds running around the back there? Yeah, come on. I mean, it's just mindlessness. You got a guy who's supposedly waiting on the running back. If the running back blocks, send him. Let's go.
I don't know if Cole Kmet gets to that ball or not.
It's hard
to say that.
But you know, you got a guy. The problem with the whole play at the end is you got a guy standing there, jawing with fans instead of closing out the game, and then he realizes the play's on. And he runs up and he doesn't do his job. He does someone else's job.
It was a loud proclamation that this is a poorly coached team.
It was. And you know what? Like, if a guy violates your rules like that, there must be something. There has to be some kind of punishment. And frankly, the head coach can't come out after a game like that and say, oh, tough locker room, you know, but we did some good things. No, you didn't.
You are the coach.
You just lost.
They are your players. The players don't tell the coach what to do. It's the other way around.
Well,
can you imagine Mike Tomlin handling something like this way? No.
I mean, this is, you know, the comparison to the Trestman era is actually a good one here, because this is like grow the man. This is open up a barbecue restaurant. Everything's good. Like,
it can't be just words.
You can't be a friend to the players, because they'll walk all over you.
Yeah, and that's happening.
And it's well.
If it doesn't have anything, if we don't have anything today to look at as a cause-effect, a consequence for that action, then you will be, the next noise you hear will be players trampling over Matt Eberflus.
I wonder if there will be a reaction. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that he were to discipline the player, mm-hmm. he were to suspend him a game, and it cost him a game check, would guys that think they need him to play, guys that are teammates of his that are covering for him, would they then start? Would it create another problem?
Maybe,
but you kind of have to
like a coach to respect him.
You got to be the guy in charge at some point, don't you?
Of course. Stop worrying about being popular.
Right.
You're the head coach. Popularity's overrated. They don't have to like you. They have to respect you.
Let's try Tanner. Tanner's on the road. Hey, Tanner.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Really simple question. So if we're evaluating Matt Eberflus in a similar way that you would evaluate players with floors and ceilings, I'm just really curious, can, you guys are both smarter than I am, can anyone make the argument that we have not already seen Matt Eberflus's ceiling? So that's my question. And then just a quick side comment. I know I'm on the radio here, but to your guys' point about Eberflus and the punishment, he's coming off a little bit like a word you might call a cat sometimes. Thanks, guys. Curious to hear what you have to say.
Thanks, Tanner. I think that's what makes this week so important, the ceiling question. What are the Bears capable of doing this year? What is he capable of coaching this season? This is different from Mark Trestman in this way. This is a team, I think, as I said to Dan Weider, they're capable of competing for a playoff spot. It is an ascending team with a rookie quarterback.
The ceiling is the roof.
And I don't think you can squander that opportunity, which makes it even more pressing for him to do something now. So I don't know about the ceiling question, because if he doesn't do anything, I think that he has put a cap on what the Bears can achieve.
Listen, it's real simple for me. You are talking about a group that loves to brag about their culture and the culture they've created. And even when they didn't have much of a culture, they were somehow the envy of the league. And now that they've tried to create a culture, you can fire two coaches and sell people. That's because you're accountable here, because we have a great culture. And so the head coach takes over as the coordinator. And guess what? He's a hell of a coordinator. I thought he did a good job in the game with some of the play calls, with some of the pressure, with the way that he forced field goals as opposed to giving up touchdowns. If Washington had scored touchdowns, that wouldn't even been close, the game.
Right.
But he did a good job at different points. The problem is that getting in the way of him coaching the entire team? And the problem is, if you're going to brag about your culture to the point of having to get rid of people is proof that your culture is good. How do you forgive this without any punishment?
How do you tolerate
it? What kind of culture?
You can't condone it.
Are you talking about?
It's a great point, Mully. And I think it's a great point to remember moving forward, because if the Bears somehow later in the season want to point to this example as them overcoming adversity, just remember they created it for themselves.
That's right.
And this is not something you can lean on later as a crutch if you don't do something about it to support this idea that you have a healthy culture that can absorb this kind of decision. If you have a culture that is as strong as you claim publicly, then it should be able to understand, people in that building should be able to understand why you need to act with some strong discipline when you have something that happened the way that it happened.
Let's try Jerry. Jerry, you're on with Mully and Haw.
First of all, thanks for taking my call. Secondly, I think this more so is a Poles thing. He drafted this kid. They're supposedly vetting to see if their sportsmanship, and he really is unbelievable. Eberflus isn't going to say anything against Poles, who's his guy. It's just a total mess. Everybody just seems to be forgetting Shane Waldron. That's another Poles guy. Even though Eberflus wanted him, they're not doing anything because it's just being swept under the rug. It's a big mess. Has Poles even said anything about this at all?
Well, I don't think that publicly he's appeared, and I'm not sure that he will. Thanks for the phone call, Jerry. I'm sure that they have discussed what to do, and he is the ultimate boss. He's Matt Eberflus's boss. So to think that they would not have these conversations, to think that Ryan Poles would not have any impact on this, I think is naive.
Well, you better be talking.
You better be talking.
Somebody better be in Flusie's ear, letting him know. Do you realize how bad that looks?
Yes, I think that's his job, right?
Yeah,
that's his role.
Well, they better have someone doing that.
But I think to go back to what he's saying, yes, Ryan Poles drafted Tyreek Stevenson. Let's not mistake what's going on here. We're not saying that. I'm not saying that Tyreek Stevenson is a player that needs to go and leave the organization. This
right.
is somebody you need to save.
No, you need to discipline him because he made a terrible error, because he stopped playing. And you need to send a message to everyone about that. And if you don't, you're sending a message to the entire league.
Hey, that's exactly true.
Softest church music here.
But it's also, I think, important to remember, you're doing this for his own good because he is a part of your future, a big part of that defense. And you can sacrifice one game if you want to even say you can still win a game. You can beat the Cardinals if you don't play Tyrique Stevenson if he's inactive.
Flusie didn't sound like he even wanted to do anything. He said, well, he apologized. Like apparently he saw the hashtag bear down the guy sent out.
He has yet to respond in a way that to me is acceptable. He has yet to respond like a football coach. He has yet to process what exactly has happened and own anything that he was responsible for. So that has been very unsatisfying. And we'll find out later today if he realizes just how empty his rhetoric sounds and just how soft he appears.
Let's try Jeff. He's on the road. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. So first-time caller, long-time listener. I normally really agree with a lot of what you guys have to say, but this Tyrique take is a little absurd to me. The coaching in that game was probably some of the worst coaching that I've ever seen in my entire life, watching the game of football for 40 years. You know, you don't get put in that position where Tyreek's out there lollygagging when you have a coach on the sideline that could have easily, you know, ran a play that would have put that Hail Mary out of question. It would have never happened if you would have ran a proper defensive call. So to me, if you're going to punish Tyreek, then you better punish Matt Eberflus, and you better punish, Shane Waldron, because the play calling in that entire football game, you know, was equally as bad, if not worse, than Tyreek's lollygagging. So if you're going to try to force Tyreek into some kind of punishment, then Ryan Poles needs to force some kind of punishment onto Matt Eberflus, and that, you know, to me, he's got to go. I've seen enough of this guy.
Jeff, I appreciate the phone call. I don't agree at all. I think that what you're talking about, you're judging the job that Matt Eberflus did and Shane Waldron did, and that's fine because we can have disagreements on what should have been done here, what should have been done there. What Tyrique Stevenson did was he defied authority.
He disrespected the game.
Well put, and that's something you can't tolerate.
No.
The other stuff is just judgment. It's debate. That's football. We do that every day. We're Monday morning quarterbacks. Yeah. And I don't think that's the same thing as saying that Tyrique Stevenson needs to be disciplined.
Yeah. No, you can't not discipline the guy because it was an egregious error.
That said, I think that they're going to probably do nothing.
Well, I you know what? I am expecting the what-me-worry kind of news conference today.
I think we've come, unfortunately, to expect from Matt Eberflus the least amount of oomph.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the only question is whether next year he'll be throwing a Great Gatsby party or maybe he won't because someone else will take the E out of the driveway.
Well, I think he's closer today to losing his job than keeping it.
Than he's ever been before. Let's try Don. Our buddy Don's on the west side. Hey, Don, always fun.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. First, to quote our dubious nemesis that was used to be in the north, relax. You know, I kind of overreacted yesterday, but I think that, Matt Eberflus is a new coach, you know, so a lot of these things is coming at him
fast.
No,
he's not.
You know, if you even look at
Don, due respect. Okay. You're a great caller. You're great insight. Mm-hmm. He's not a new coach. This is year three.
Just let me finish one time. I'm not making excuses for him, but it's just like, you know, some of these things are coming at him fast, you know. So I'm just looking from a human standpoint. You know, I'm not saying that Tyrique Stevenson doesn't deserve to be punished. Yes, he does. You know, I just think that expectations is risen. I think that it's just one game. I think that we as fans hasn't been in a position to where, you know, we have these high expectations and they're actually fulfilling them. So I just feel like moving forward, I think it should be an internal thing that galvanizes the team. I don't think that this should be a thing that separates the team at all. I think that, Matt Eberflus, of course, he has to do his job. You know, I think that Ryan Poles, everybody collectively has to, okay, you sit a half, you sit a game, whatever the punishment may be, we don't have to know about it. But I want this to galvanize the team. I don't want it to tear us apart. It was egregious. It was a very big mistake, you know, but it's human. We're human. We're prone to make mistakes. So I say, okay, let the forgiveness begin. You know, punish them, however you punish them internally. We don't need to know about it. and then don't lose next game. If we lose the next game, then that's furthermore going to make things worse. So that's even more so why we need to galvanize, I feel, around the team. But I do understand where everybody's coming from. Yes, I do feel as though Stevenson deserves to be punished. And I think that Matt Eberflus, man, he just needs to, you know, be a head coach. Don't be so much of a coordinator. Be a head coach. Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Don.
Listen, you know, here's the thing. You need to get a hold of your team if you are the head coach of it. And you need to bring them in, and you need to tell them all, hey, enough. We've heard from everyone, and I don't want to hear any more. You got something to say, come to my office. This is what we're doing in this situation, and I don't want to hear one of you or read one of you talking about it to the media, talking about it to each other. You want to come talk to a coach, come talk to a coach. Lay down the law and tell and just and use, you know, you don't want to be here. You don't have to be here. I would threaten people.
This is not a new coach. This is a first time
football
head coach 2 years ago. This is his third season. You're right. He needs to assert something that distinguishes himself.
He's in charge
from everybody else. He's in charge. Show it. We shouldn't have these questions on Wednesday. We should have already heard what he was going to do or something he already did. All we've done since the game happened, and we heard from Matt Eberflus on Monday, but we also heard from his players. We can start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can count 5 guys who have raised questions about the way things were handled.
Exactly.
If I'm Matt Eberflus, I am putting and making it known to my team today, enough.
I mean.
Enough noise.
I might even just end the captaincy of everyone. Hey, we got no more captains, all right? I'm the guy in charge of the team. Yeah. You're going to do what I tell you to do. We're not second-guessing our calls.
Would he go out for the coin flip?
Should they? Yeah, wouldn't that be funny? Yeah, we're not sending anyone out for the coin flip. We have no call. Whatever they decide, we'll take it for a game.
But I know what you're saying.
I'm just saying enough. You can't let this go on.
There's a tricky balance there between empowering your players to be heard and feel like they have a say in the leadership and direction of your football team, and also having them remember that they are not the coach.
That's what you need to remind everyone of.
But what happened with the Indianapolis thing, the intervention, as Dan Weider referred to it as, when you had Mercedes Lewis approaching Shane Waldron, like, hey, we need the scripted 15, the first 15. All that did was it empowered these players even more to understand that in this hierarchy here, you're the head coach, but, you know, we are the leaders here, and they're going to do our way.
That's what it looks like. It looks like the inmates are the guards. And I'll tell you what, nice guy Matt, You're gonna be, you know, asking some of your players, hey, can you help me move some boxes?
Exactly.
That's what happens. The old line about being a coach is that if you listen to the fans, you wind up sitting next to them, and that's what this is as well. You need to be the leader of the bloody team, and you need to lay down the law a little bit here. Hey, I'm catching a lot of grief. Did I do this wrong and that wrong? Yeah, but you know what? I am the bloody coach. I will be in charge, and if you don't like it, if you got a problem with it, come to me. We can have a conversation, but I don't want to read a word about it anywhere.
Exactly. The Bears hired a nice guy as a head coach. He's got to stop being nice.
That's it.
This is the week to stop being nice, Matt Eberflus. Let us be reminded of what a head coach sounds like in Chicago.
My God, this is getting, like, just crazy.
Let's talk baseball.
Yeah, we got
Bruce.
We got Bruce Levine's going to join us next, and we're going to talk about the new White Sox manager and when he'll be introduced and what amount of change are we expecting. Everything is turned upside down.
What kind of willpower will the White Sox have now?
Have they promised him Juan Soto? No, they haven't. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always fun to talk to our guy, Bruce Levine. He is our colleague, and he does a great job. And he is, like all our guests, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, the Chicago White Sox making some news during the World Series with a story breaking that they have a new manager in Will Venable. And I imagine there'll be some sort of press conference, I'm guessing, tomorrow, even if the World Series is going on. I think that the commissioner's office can allow a team with a story like this breaking, you know, a couple days before to possibly do something with Venable tomorrow.
Bruce, Venable played in the majors for 9 seasons, but he became part of the Cubs organization in 2017. Theo Epstein hired him. He sat in the dugout as a first base coach next to Joe Maddon for a couple years. Then he was Alex Cora's bench coach. With Bruce Bochy, he was the associate manager. What do you think of Will Venable, and how does that background predict future success possibly?
Well, he, very highly thought of guy as far as just to, you know, the way that he was a teammate, the way that he thought about the game. You know, a Princeton grad, you know, so he combined, you know, the analytics along with the baseball life or career because of the fact that, you know, he grew up in a baseball family. His father, Max, was a player a long time, played mostly for the Montreal Expos back in the day. So this is, it's in his blood, but, you know, again, he comes with a more modern look to the game as well because of the fact that he is an analytics guy. When Epstein hired him, he had been playing for Jed Hoyer in San Diego for a couple years before Jed came over from the Padres when he was the general manager of the Padres and came to the Cubs as the general manager. So Venable fit right into what they were doing as far as the modern look. He did interview with the Cubs before Ross was hired before the 2020 season. So he does have a good pedigree, and people should probably look forward to a more modern guy in the dugout there, somebody that combines the analytics and you know, the R&D look to the game as well as the practical baseball scouting part.
He was pursued by the Mets a year ago and the Guardians a year ago and by Florida this year. Why the White Sox? What do you think appealed to him about this job?
Well, I think the younger guys that are in the front office and the idea that he's going to be a partner with Chris Getz and the rest of the front office, that is basically what they have. That's basically what they sell right now. The idea that you come with us, it's not going to be great right now, but down the road here, you are going to be part of something special here. Nobody in our way to tell us what to do. We're going to do it our way. And I think that would be exciting for a baseball guy like Venable. No, he either did interview Monday with the Miami Marlins or was going to this week. So I'm sure that managing a team other than the White Sox was going to be there pretty soon. But again, you know, you go back to the theory, 1 out of 30, the challenge is certainly great for anybody coming into the White Sox, and this will be no different for Venable.
Might be great for Will Venable. He might be a very good, smart, solid manager, Bruce. We don't know, and we don't know because he doesn't have experience. Why do you think the White Sox stayed away from managers with experience?
Well, I think it's a combination of the two. I don't think, you know, that, you know, Showalter is still an outstanding baseball guy, and, you know, he was mentioned as somebody that was interested in talking about this job. But, you know, bringing in a 64, 65-year-old guy at this point, sit out this thing for a couple of years until it gets straightened out. This is player development at the very peak level at the major league level, okay? We see it a lot now. You know, I mean, how many teams can you name right now, even in the World Series, where they have guys that hit 210, 220, and they're quasi-regulars, some of the bottom of the lineups in Major League Baseball, you know, guys that are still learning the game. And it's important to have instructors. It's important to have guys who you think the same way with if you're the general manager of a team. And the manager is not thinking, when are we going to be good? When is my reputation going to get better? I think Venable is just that player development guy that feels this is a great opportunity for him to join a young group and build something special. It is, without question, the ultimate challenge at this point where the organization is at. There's no question about that. This is a team bereft of any type of offensive players outside of Luis Robert that you can even think about counting on going toward the future. So there's a lot of work to be done in the offseason here. Trades are going to be part of that. We're going to hear a lot about Crochet being sought by four or five different teams, maybe six. You're going to hear about Robert maybe being moved. But at some point here, the White Sox are going to have to start building their offense along with the young pitching that they've started to develop in the organization.
So what does success look like in Will Venable's first year as the White Sox manager? How many games difference must there be? Can he win 50? Is that enough? 60? Can he maybe not lose 100 games? What is the expectation level?
Watchable.
White Sox, that's progress.
That's one. It wants to be, they just need to look like they have players who are major leaguers. So, if you want to put a number on it, if the White Sox lost 99 games and they'd improved by 22 games, would you say that is improvement? That is a something the fans can start looking at. Will we see the Colson Montgomerys come up and play shortstop or third base every day? Will there be, you know, position players that they can identify with? Will the bullpen build out to a point where you can have a modern bullpen that can compete on an everyday basis? So a lot of questions to be answered, a lot of work to do. You can't paint a rosy picture other than the fact is they have the support of the ownership. The front office has autonomy, and you hope that they are able to start building out this project here this season.
Bruce, you get to know these guys on the staffs of the Cubs and the White Sox. Do you remember Will Venable? He's a college basketball player at Princeton. He's got a really interesting background growing up, the son of a major leaguer, moving all around. So what was he like, if you remember him?
He was a, you know, interesting guy. As a lot of the coaches were under Epstein when he was there, really bright, young thinking guys, but mostly too busy to talk. In other words, during the Madden era, mostly.
So he dismissed you.
I don't know if he dismissed me. I think that the coaching staff is more like getting to talk to an NFL coordinator now. Uh-huh. You know, yeah. You kind of had to make an appointment. So I wouldn't say that I talked to Will a lot of times, but I wouldn't say I learned a lot about baseball talking to him or he shared that much. I think, you know, the business of learning about, you know, coaching in modern times right now, there's not a lot of sitting around and spitting and waiting for the game to start. Baseball is a much different sport now with preparation for baseball games 4 hours before, and guys actually doing work rather than just sitting around in their underwear and spinning into a cup.
How do you envision this team being built? In other words, Bruce, they signed some guys, brought in a guy from Korea, ended up capable of trading him. They had Tommy Pham here for a while. I saw him in the playoffs a couple teams later. I'm just wondering, How do they put this team together? Are they looking for guys that can come in and give them some professionalism and then move them come trade deadline? Are they out of that business now? Are they waiting to develop? What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, first of all, they have to a free agent market has to be established. And again, predictions from general managers that I've talked to off the record are saying that it's going to be another rough free agent season because of the RSN issues out there. And the RSN issues are real for every team in baseball. Eventually, 8 years from now, it'll be real for the Los Angeles Dodgers, who get $300 million a year from their TV deal, and the carrier is losing $150 million a year. So from that perspective, it's going to be probably a slow developing free agent market, more trades, more people still putting value on their young players. I would say, if you're a White Sox fan, look forward to see how they handle Crochet, and by the winter meetings, if they have traded him for 3 or 4 really good-looking young players in another organization. It came close before the trading deadline. A National League East team wouldn't give up the third top prospect that they were looking for. So I think that's the way they're going to go. Would you love to keep Crochet a part of your team and a leader? Sure. But the numbers just don't play out with a couple years left on his contract and the idea that he can bring you an awful lot to the table as far as your offense goes. He's got to bring that in. Robert as well. You have to have some really good talent on the field every day. And, you know, and that's, it's pretty obvious to anybody. I don't think you need an expert to tell you they just didn't have offense. They were 100 runs under the next closest team to them in Major League Baseball last year. So it's got to improve a lot. I think they've done a nice job of improving some of the pitching and identifying young starting pitchers going forward. They've done a good job of that. After that, you know, they've got an awful lot of work to do.
Thanks, Bruce. Great catching up.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, guys.
Good talking baseball with you.
Yeah, great work, as always.
We'd never dismiss him. We're never too busy for Bruce.
No, it's important to talk to people when things happen. Bruce knows.
Bruce knows. Definitely.
All right. We've got our favorite BetMGM ambassador, Chris Chelios, will join us next. I wonder if Chelly was ever involved in a Hail Mary.
What's the hockey equivalent?
Other than a prayer. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Chris Chelios. Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score! BetMGM ambassador. The king of sportsbooks.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in.
Three-time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Chris Chelios, BetMGM Grand Ambassador, BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. And Chris joins us on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
We're trying to figure out what would be the hockey equivalent of a Hail Mary pass. Is it maybe pulling the goalie in the second period rather than at the end of the game?
No, but I'm glad that you brought that up first. So there's a term in hockey called the bag skate. It's basically a punishment for doing something stupid. And you're on the ice, and the coach skates you for an hour, no pucks, and just until you drop. And that's what they should do to Stevenson. They should line him up on the goal line and just make him run for an hour, and then maybe even throw in the stadium stairs for punishment.
Have you ever had a younger teammate do something that silly? And how would a player like you handle something like that?
Never. I can remember one time one guy had kind of a crazy celebration for his first goal. It was almost... It was like borderline embarrassing, but it was genuine, and he was just so excited. But no, this is right at the top of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get it. He was happy, and someone was jawing at him, but when you see that, and some of the reporters noticed it while the game was ongoing, it just makes you wonder, how did they not see it in the press box? How did they not call a timeout? How did they not stop what was happening when the guy wasn't paying attention? It's just madness.
Yeah. I mean, again, when things go wrong, that's the kind of stuff that happens. So anyway, let's move on. That was a disaster.
Chris, were you at the Yankees game?
I was. Yeah, I'm still here. I came in for the three games, and then I'm going to go to that Ranger game on Friday. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So what brought you to New York, and who were you cheering for?
Honestly, I try and make it to like the World Series and Super Bowls when I can, when I'm not working. And I, you know, obviously a big fan of Anthony Rizzo. I got to know his family, so I'm cheering for the Yankees. I would have hated to see them lose at home, and now hopefully they'll win tonight and make a series out of it. I'm not a big fan of LA people, but I don't mind the Dodgers. They got what a great team. Yeah, they're loaded, boy. They're fun to watch.
I thought it was one of the more bizarre things I've seen. I wonder what it was like being there when Mookie Betts catches the ball in the crowd and two guys like attack him and pull the ball out of his glove.
They did attack him.
I mean, that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen, too. Like the fans, the way the fans cheered for those two guys and literally ripped the glove, grabbed his arm, nearly pulled his hand out of his glove. Like, it was great.
So if you're there with Rizzo, is this it for him? Do you think he comes back and plays next year? Is he going to walk away? This is swan song?
I mean, I don't know. He's actually had a really good, the two series he's been in. He's one of the guys that gets on base and plays the game the way you're supposed to. Unfortunately, the last couple of years, he's had some weird injuries, right? The neck, and then he broke his hand. But when he's healthy, boy, he's effective. And you saw the catch he made and the couple plays he made, defensively. There's no question that's a value, too. So I hope he keeps playing. I know he loves New York, and, I got to know his in-laws are Greek, so they're a lot of fun.
Charlie, what do you think about the Hawks lately? They go into Denver. They get a victory they needed. They had lost four in a row. Have they turned the corner?
Well, it's a big win for sure. Now they're going into San Jose, right? So they keep moving forward. That's a game they should win. They should get some confidence off that, the Colorado game. I know there's two empty net goals, but they still played good. And quite honestly, again, I've said it, during the course of the shows in the past few weeks, They're not getting outshot like they were last year. They're in the games. They're very even games, and they just came on the wrong side those last four. But they got to, to take a step forward, they got to beat San Jose, and then they'll have a tough game in L.A. But, again, I like the way they're playing. I like the guys they added. Maroon's doing his job. Foligno plays his role. And again, maybe there's still more room for improvement, but they're definitely playing a better game defensively in the way they should be playing.
That victory looked so good because they got a couple of empty netters at the end there, so they end up winning 5-2.
Yeah, 5-2.
Nice to see them just come. It's nice to see a scoreline that looked professional.
Yeah, that's misleading, and I didn't realize it either until I saw the two empty net goals. But again, the fact that that's a tough place to play in Colorado. They're not quite a desperate team, but they're a team that's been struggling over the past year and a half, too. They just haven't found their game. But, again, that's one of the toughest places to go in and win a road game with that air and, the team that they have and the speed you're dealing with.
Kelly, Connor Murphy has been laying the wood. He has been very physical. A couple monster hits this year so far. Is he a different player this year, or has he been doing that for a long time and we just haven't noticed as much?
No, I think he came out and from Dave, first game, he drawn penalties. He ran one of the other team's best players. And that's what he needs to be. Every coach, they talk about consistency. You can't show up once every four or five games. And I think Connor Murphy realizes there's a competition there on the back end. There's guys ready to, possibly take his job. So he's been great. They put him down in the, fourth and fifth and sixth pairings, and he's way more effective there. But yeah, he's bringing it every night. And I always compared him to like a Keith Magnuson, plays with a lot of heart, not the most skill in the world, but he's got off to a good start. And he's been very, they need to do that. They need to initiate things like Murphy's doing and draw some penalties. And, the way their power play, they came out of the gate with that power play, that'll win some games for you.
Great stuff, Chris. Appreciate it.
Enjoy game five.
All right, guys. Take care. Thank you.
That is Chris Chelios. I love his in-laws are Greek. That's hysterical.
And he's in New York for the World Series because he just likes to go to World Series and Super Bowls.
But he knows everyone.
He knows everybody.
He literally knows everybody in the world.
I thought he might have a little more love for the Dodgers given his time in Malibu.
Yeah, that's interesting. He doesn't like LA
Like LA people.
It's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
That's awesome. He's great.
Yeah, he's the best. I love
him. Didn't you just know he would be at the World Series? I mean, we should have known that.
He's
everywhere.
I can't believe you asked him. You know what else is hysterical? Can you imagine if anybody somehow got out of the stands and messed with him? But he got a kick out of seeing what happened with Mookie.
He might be in the penalty box.
All right, that's pretty funny stuff. We've got Stacey Dales. She's going to join us next. We'll get her perspective on, and you know, Stacey knows everyone, the national reaction to what has gone on with the Bears. We'll talk to Stacey Dales next. Mully and Haw on the Score.